This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery, so the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Hello and welcome to episode 289 of the Stacey West podcast, the number that keeps going up and up, just like the football club that it relates to. My name is Gary. I am once again your regular host after my little soiree over to a tropical island, and I'm joined by a man who doesn't look like he's ever seen a tropical island, such as his pale complexion on the camera this week. Charlie Beeston, how are you doing?
I've been to tropical places. I've been to the Galapagos Islands, and I don't think there's much more tropical than that.
The Galapagos Islands? Didn't Luxembourg beat them the other week in a friendly?
I don't think Galapagos Islands have a football team, funnily enough.
They're not. Oh, I was trying to trick you up. The reason I've said Luxembourg is because I actually listened to a podcast the other day, at Stacey West one. You know, listen. Yeah,
was
I did.
Was it the one
with
me and Chris?
It was the it was one with you and Chris, actually. But it was the Academy one, because I'd heard some really good things about it. I know you obviously put time in with Jez on the Academy one. And I've heard Chris's story before, but to hear it from start to finish like that as well was a really good springboard. So I thought that was good work by both of you.
Well, thank you. I'll be honest, I hadn't heard that story from Chris. Like, I knew that he'd sort of been in the Academy at one stage or whatever, but never really knew much about it. And, you know, fair play to Chris, because he was obviously really, really open on the podcast about it. And, I mean, I got a message from a couple of people as well, sort of saying how good of a listen it was to be listening to his story like that. And, I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, so good work, especially getting me to listen to a podcast.
Thank you.
Because I think the only ones I've listened to other than that, one I was forced to listen to, one I'd recorded in the car on the way to a gig with Pete Summers, which was horrendous for me, especially because what Pete likes to do is halfway through the podcast is stop it and then message me when I've said something stupid. And sometimes it's not even halfway. It's like every 10 or 15 minutes he'll message me going, why have you said this? And I'll go, haven't you listened to the rest of it? And he's like, no, I've just stopped it to tell you you're a knob. I'll listen to the rest of it now.
So I cannot listen to one of my own. Hate it.
No, I can't. My voice is. I find my voice when I project it bearable. Maybe on a podcast, I think my voice sounds quite smug and snidey.
Yeah.
No, Charlie. Yeah. Thanks, mate.
No worries.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of. Fuck off. Speaking of the Stacey West podcast, those of you who are watching online, and that's never, because we don't put these online, maybe that's something we might be doing next year, next season, but we might put a little short together on this. There's a guy called actually Henry Elwell. I just want to give a big shout out, because he does all our shorts at the minute, YouTube and TikTok. So he's a student at Lincoln College, I think, looking at doing media at university, and he's been brilliant. So hopefully Henry will he will clip the bit after this, because I'm sure he won't want his own name, but he's been putting a lot of hard work in behind the scenes. So thank you for that. So I am wearing a Stacey West hoodie. Now, I'm quite excited, actually, about this. It's not merchandise that we are or that we intend to release to people. If you're watching on TikTok or something and you think, actually, I'd quite like one of those hoodies, I'm happy to, if we get, let's say, 10 people who want one, I'm happy to put an order together and put the money to the foundation. But Fox Electrical, Bellgate Clothing, Stu, Fox, Marl Beaumont, brilliant, brilliant people. Stu and Marl have kindly donated four of these hoodies, one for each of the Stacey West team. I'm the only one that's got them. Everybody else is in the other room. But we also then got running tops as well. Obviously, we provided some running tops to people for the pricely sum of £20. And every penny of that can now go to the foundation. Again, thanks to Stu, Marl and Bellgate Clothing. So, yeah, thank you very much. They look good, don't they, Charlie?
They really do. I can't wait to get mine. Am I going to get mine before the 10K?
Well, we've got a home game before the 10K.
Wigan. Wigan, yes.
The day before.
Yeah, you're turning up to that one, yeah.
Well, yeah, because I'm not going to be in Mauritius, am I? So
in Mauritius, right. Ill or anything like that.
All right. Mr. Little Groundhopper.
Hey, you're the one that said that we had one of the best months we've ever had, scored 17 goals and you only scored one of them.
Saw one of them. I didn't score any of them, Charlie, did I?
I said saw.
Yeah, people aren't going to say this. So yeah, the Wigan game, I'll give Chris his tomorrow because unfortunately we're missing Reading. We're on a stag weekend because our numpty friend David chose to book his stag weekend on a football season game Saturday, and he's booked his wedding on a football season Saturday in August. So he's having his stag weekend one season, his wedding the next season. And when we confronted him about it, me and Matt, because we did, he was like, well, I didn't want to book it in the summer. It might clash with the Euros. What is the likelihood that England are actually going to play on a Saturday? We might play one game, honestly. I'll tell you what, if I won best man, I'd make up an excuse.
I wouldn't blame you at the minute with the form that we're on. You don't want to miss any games.
Well, I mean, I think I said on the podcast with Chris, I've cancelled the weekend away with Fee that we'd booked.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, just in case. I can't remember who I said that to. It might have been Marl yesterday at Bellgate Clothing. I said, I've cancelled the weekend away. And it was just this kind of look of like, wow, have you? He's like, yeah, I've done that. Don't worry about that. I didn't lose a deposit. I was going to lose a deposit. Did I say it on the live as well, did I?
Yeah. Yeah.
Repeating my stuff. Speaking about repeats. This Easter weekend felt an awful lot like the repeat of the 2016-17 season. Now, Chris and I picked over Leighton Orient or Torquay, as it was back then, a game against the side that we would hope to be, a game that we made hard work against a team that really battled against us, a game in which we needed a late winner in front of a packed crowd. Very, very much deja vu. But it surely couldn't be deja vu on the Monday. Well, it was, because we went away to a team who played up in the north, which is always traditionally a kind of a tough journey to have to make. And we came away with a win after what was probably, in fairness, partly an unconvincing performance, Charlie. Let's start with that.
Yeah, it was... Like you say, it wasn't really the most convincing of performances, and it was a little bit of a difficult one to actually sort of sit through. I'm gonna start with that because going up there, and I've been saying it all through this run, let's just enjoy it. No real nerves. It's gonna be fine. It's gonna be great. We're just gonna have fun. We're playing some great football. It'd be awesome to watch all of this. And at one point, I was head in hands in my chair. And that was whilst we were winning up at Carlisle.
Roy told me. Roy messaged me and told me. He said you had to sit down.
I genuinely felt sick at one point. Like the last time I felt that sick was when we conceded the two goals early. And that, obviously, bearing in mind, we weren't there that away at Sunderland in the semi-final of the playoffs.
I cried that day.
Yeah, horrible feeling until we scored and then the final whistle blew. But
that was when I cried.
Horrible game. Yeah.
I know we're going to go on to it. I was on holiday that day. We were in Widdermouth Bay and I'd gone back. I'd watched it and there was my mum, Mel, my mum's partner, and Fee all there. And they were just going about their business. And I was off in this little summer house watching it. And the final whistle went and I couldn't help it. But I didn't want them to see me. I was literally, tears were pouring. I think it's because we've been so close to being eliminated and we turned it all around. And I had to go and sit in the bedroom and I just cried for 5 minutes before I could come back.
You know, it's quite funny that, because I was away in Scotland at the time. So obviously I think did we play like the Wednesday night or whatever? In the home leg. And then I got the first train out on the Thursday morning up to Scotland to go stay at a friend's house for a few days. And they were all sort of pottering around. And basically I'd said to her, I'm only coming up on those dates if I can commandeer your living room for a few hours on that Saturday afternoon or whatever it was, because there's no chance I'm missing this game. So it's like, yeah, it's fine. So they're all in and out. And I'm sat there right in front of this massive telly, just on a chair. And like I say, they brought food, on like a takeaway or something. I remember sitting trying to eat this takeaway. I couldn't finish it. I ate like less than half of it. I felt like really guilty to her mum and that for just refusing to eat the food. But it's like I could not put anything down. It was horrid.
Bringing it back round to the modern day. So obviously we suffered a blow in the warm-up. I think that's the first thing to touch on. I'm wondering if the Stacey West is cursed, because no sooner do I do an article about a player and how influential they are, but they seem to get injured. I think I did one on Ted Bishop and then he missed the next game. I think I've done one on Ethan Hamilton a few weeks ago and he missed a game. So I did one on Lucas Jensen, obviously the top goalkeeper in League One, bar none at the moment. Hurt himself in training. Now, just as an update, I think in the press conference today, it's been said he's had injections and even touch and go for Saturday. But a bit of a blow beforehand, but Jordan Wright came in, made an early save, didn't he? And I think that gave him confidence.
Yeah, it did. It's of course a blow when you're losing a goalkeeper that has been so good as what Lucas Jensen has been. But I also wasn't too worried, because it was Jordan Wright. Think if it was an unknown sort of young goalkeeper that was coming. Yeah, for example, Isaac Allen, who was on the bench the other week, if I'm not mistaken, in the league. Now, if it had happened in that game, I'd have been worried, because it's a goalkeeper we've never seen before. We don't know what they're all about. But Jordan Wright, you know that he can come in and do a stellar job. I mean, every single manager that's had him has praised how fantastic he's been as a second in command and how he actually makes the starting goalkeeper so much better as well. I wasn't too worried. Don't go cursing anybody else, by the way, guys, because I'm assuming now that means that Sean Rowan's going to be injured this weekend.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. I missed Isaac Allen being on the bench. Yeah. So obviously it was the Bristol Rovers game, wasn't it? Do you know how many games Jordan Wright has played for Lincoln? Bear in mind, he's never been the number one.
Only in league or?
No, across the board.
All competitions, I'd say about 25, 30.
Yeah, 31 games.
Yeah,
which is the bulk of his senior thing. Started 17 league games. So we're not talking about, I mean, when Sam Long came in, he did really well at Plymouth. I know you said that was going to be your overriding memory of Sam Long, I think, on the podcast. You know, it may not be, by the way. He may come in and have a real say in the future. But, I think it's really interesting that Jordan came in. First game, I think, since April last year in the league, and he hasn't played under Michael Scabala at all. He played in the 2-0 win against Notts County under Tom Shaw in the Cup. That was the last time he played. Other than that, he then didn't get a run out in the next round of the Cup, which was quite interesting. But look, he got an early save. But all of the early running, I think, was ours. And do you know what? We talk about this not being the strongest performance. I actually thought for the first 15, 20 minutes, we looked very, very good. They were all at sea. We had complete control in the middle of the park. And then we got a goal, which Michael Scabala was delighted about, by the way, because he said it's exactly what we've been doing on training. Assist for Taylor and a goal for Big Ben.
I'm not surprised he's pleased with that goal. I thought it was fantastic. I mean, it all starts with Ben House. He plays, obviously, the ball out to Lass, and Lass just has so much space in front of him. And he just whips in one of those signature crosses that we know that Lass Sorensen can do. Taylor at the back post, I'll be honest, I thought, as I'm sure most people did, I watched the game back on Tuesday morning, I thought he was just going to nod that in, sort of thing. Even after knowing what was going to happen, you still sort of expect him to shoot from there. But the way then he just knocks it back into Ben House, who's just in all the space in the world, is brilliant. I think even Ben said in his post-match presser as well that he just assumed that Taylor was going to be putting it in the back of the net, but it just shows that team cohesion at the minute. Everybody's happy to be sharing around the goals.
Now, just a very quick point on Lass, by the way, who it fascinates me because every week on the Stacey West ratings, for some reason, Lass has been 1 or 2 points below everybody else, despite being, you know, consistent as anything. But then when we put out on Twitter the other day who's player of the season, Lass was up there with Ethan Arahan and Pordy. What that is, that's consistency. It's like Sam Habergham quietly getting on with your job. Here's the thing. There was some reports yesterday that Championship clubs are looking at Lass Sorensen. A club insider, it would be wrong of me to say, who messaged me last night and just said, and the exact words are, I think it's just worth confirming that the option on Lass's contract is in the club's favour. Or there's a club, an option on his contract. So Lass won't be walking away unless we don't offer him a deal or something like that. There's definitely an option in his contract.
So it's not been triggered yet?
Again, all I know, I don't know the ins and outs of it. I mean, I'm assuming the option in the contract wouldn't be triggered until the contract was up for renewal. I mean, it may have been done behind the scenes. I think Lass has been really good. I think he hasn't stood out as much as he did against, I want to say, Charlton, when he had 11 shots or something in the game. But I just think he's been steadily consistent throughout. And look, in that, you know, that first 15 minutes, our XG was 0.51. We scored. We had 3 shots, 1 on target. I thought that the goal more or less killed the first half after that. Because I felt that we didn't particularly, I don't know why, I've just got a question mark bubble thing come up there. Did you see that?
Like, it was like a like bubble thing. What on earth was that?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never seen that.
Are we accidentally live streaming this and someone's just given us a like?
I don't know. The rest of the half, we were the better side, by the way. 5 shots, 2 on target, I think, in that period. And the goal knocked the stuffing out of Carlisle. And for that period, for that 30-minute period after the goal through to half-time, there was only ever going to be one winner. They had lots of possession, but they did nothing with it. We had control of the midfield. We were able to attack without really breaking them down. It was just, for me, there was no nerves at that point.
No, to be honest, there wasn't at that point. Like, it's weird because at the minute, if we score a goal in the first 15, first 20 minutes, you know, I mean, me and Chris on the monthly show, we went through the stats. We're top of the league by 6 points in the first 15 minutes of games. Like, we start really quickly. We know it's a feature of Marcus Kubala's side and the run that we're on. But then the second half of the first half, in almost every single game recently, we've kind of I don't want to use the word sat back, but we've not quite been as much of a sort of high pressing unit. We're not rushing things. We're willing to let the other side have the ball if they want, not let them actually do anything with it. I mean, the only time where there was ever really any danger in that for me was Barnsley recently, but you know, it's not that common at the minute that we're scoring goals and we're attacking too much between, let's say, the 31st minute and the 45th minute. So again, when it happened on Monday, wasn't really that worried. I sort of thought, well, this is the game plan. We know what's happening. The lads have had a long travel up. They've played on Friday. We're not going to be asking them to be running and pressing high intensity for a full 90 minutes. This is the period where we've decided that we can sit back a little bit. Not an issue. We've got the early goal. Great. So, yeah, at that point, going into half-time, 1-0, sort of expected that, I don't want to say it was going to be game over, but I sort of thought, well, we might be able to get another one, maybe even two in the second half. I sort of put the game to bed.
Do you know how many of our goals have been scored between 30 and 45 minutes? Of how many of the 17 that we scored were between 30 and 45 minutes?
One.
None. Yeah. And you have to go back to Charlton away on the 13th of February to find us scoring in that period. And before that, oh my Lord. Before that, you have to go back to Danny Mandroyu's penalty against Derby on the 21st of December. So it's definitely a period of the game, I think, where we look to suck the life away a little bit. Mm. But again, you know, I quote Danny Cowley quite a lot. You take the game in little chunks, and Michael Scabala clearly does that. High press, first 15 minutes, get a goal, 2-3, and then kind of work on from there. So that takes us to half-time, Charlie. Now, half-time, I was cool as a cucumber. I was watching it with Chris. He was the same. He made a cup of tea. It was a 7 out of 10 cup of tea. We sat down. We had a little bit of a chat. It was all we need to do is come out all guns blazing. The 15-minute period, between, well, even the five-minute period between 45 and 50 minutes. Carlisle, I mean, what happened? They'd clearly had a boot up the ball, and they'd clearly, whatever was in their half-time oranges, I'll have a couple of grams of that when we go away for this stag weekend. Weren't they?
Yeah, like they obviously came out all guns blazing. And the thing is, with Carlisle, it's something that I'm a little bit worried about going away to Cheltenham, for example, in the last away game of the season, because there's a chance that Cheltenham could be relegated by the time we play them. I doubt it, but there is a chance. If that does happen, suddenly they're playing with freedom and they can just come at us for a full 90 minutes. It doesn't really mean much. And I think that was, again, the sort of thing with Carlisle. At half-time, they were down. Burton were beating Barnsley. They were effectively relegated. The players probably knew that. So it was come out, get a goal, get two. There is only one way you're salvaging your team's place in League One for next season, and that is by scoring a few goals. So, you know, they obviously sort of took that message on board, and they had some really, really good chances. But again, and it kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier, Jordan Wright, he came in, and I thought, again, he was absolutely outstanding. He was as good as what I think Lucas Jensen would have been in those situations, obviously, because he didn't concede. So he stopped some really, really good shots. I mean, Dan Butterworth, he hit the post, if I'm not mistaken, before our goal, didn't he? I mean, Jordan Wright also stopping the header. Again, was that Butterworth as well?
Wasn't it?
Right. Yes, it was, wasn't it? And then, like, even in the lead up to our goal, there was a scramble in the penalty area from a corner of theirs, and they could have quite easily have gotten the lucky bounce and got a goal away. Obviously, that isn't what happened, and we broke up the other end, but they had so many great chances.
In 2 minutes, they had five efforts, two on target. and one of the ones that was off target was Butterworth that hit the post. Yeah. So, I mean, they came out and they were absolutely firing. And what you've said there about the concern about a team playing with freedom coming at us, I'm the opposite to that. I'm not concerned about that. I relish that and want that. Because when a team comes at us, if we can make sure we can maintain a degree of control ourselves, we can do what we did. And what we did was score a goal from our only chance in a 15-minute period, from a 0.08 XG. Great goal, and it was a flip reverse. Assist by House, finished by Taylor. And again, do you know that Joe Taylor missed chances that were 10 times easier in that than that against Peterborough and Derby. But you get confidence. You've got a player like Joe Taylor, and you get a little bit of confidence in him, and he can do that. And actually, that is a massive, for me, that's a massively underrated finish. I thought it was a really good goal.
He's taken it away from goal, bear in mind, because this was, again, the sort of the conversation I think most people will have been having watching the game, of thought he'd run it a little bit too wide there, missed the opportunity, it was gone. But no, he's running away from goal, somehow manages to turn, stand his man up, get in a comfortable position, and just slots it in that far, so, you know, finesses it into that far post corner. Top striker's goal, that is a reason why someone like a Joe Taylor could end up being a very, very expensive player in the summer.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then white noise. It was then white noise after that goal for a huge portion of the game. And this is where the nerves kicked in for you and I. And this is where Chris was the other way. So, like, before the Orient game, Chris was a bag of nerves in Gwynn's. Yeah. And I was like, I was happy with it. You know what? You know, nothing ventured, nothing gained, all that sort of stuff. You give us a 2-0 lead, and I know Oxford are going to hammer Fleetwood. I think it was 3-0 at the time. 2-0 is a slender lead. I was really worried. I thought if they get a goal, we are going to be absolutely under the cosh here. It's going to be a real struggle for us. And they didn't build pressure as such, but they had opportunities on 69 minutes, on 73 minutes, and then they scored on 80 minutes. It was that slow moving towards a crescendo. This team, this Carlisle team, were relegated. I've already said this before in writing, but they have got some really good players. Luke Armstrong, Wrexham wanted to pay a big fee for him in the summer, and it fell apart. Even a Sam Lavelle, who is, you know, okay, he's a, you might call him a journeyman at this level, But yeah, you know, he's got loads of games under his belt for Morecambe. You know, he's a good player. I was fearful, and I know you were the same.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, Sam Lavelle, good player, not a great season from him personally. He's made a lot of mistakes, but yeah, agreed. Like on the whole, I said it to Roy sat next to me, Northampton away. That's the only thing I couldn't get Northampton away out of my mind, yeah. And it was exactly what it was because they were creating chances, you know. I mean, look, you'll have the XG in front of you. I don't know quite how many of the chances you would necessarily class as clear-cut in that period. But there was enough chances that was, you know, classified as a barrage on our goal at certain points. And like I say, those nerves kicked in very much because at that point, we're in the playoffs. Oxford are also winning. And Oxford are one of the sides that I thought were going to fall away and it was going to be between us and Blackpool, but now Blackpool not winning one of the games that I nailed on as them to win. Suddenly now I'm thinking, is it us versus Oxford again? And it's all going round in your head. But like I say, all I could think about was Northampton away. And then that got made even worse when the referee put up, I think it was 8 minutes. And if you remember, Northampton away, the goal was scored on the 98th minute. So again, just everything seemed to be pure deja vu.
I think Sam Lavelle has only scored 5 league goals in the last 3 years and 2 of them against us. So, yeah, they had 3 clear-cut chances. Just before Sam Lavelle, there was one for Neil, which was 0.23, and one for Armstrong, 0.26 XG. So they had the opportunities. The board went up. I was with you. I was just like, oh. And do you know what? Actually, I thought Seb Stockbridge was referee. I'm always quick to criticise that man. I thought he had an excellent game. I thought he let it flow. You know, there was what was the one booking? Was there a booking? I can't remember if we.
I don't think we got one. I think they got a couple late on, if I'm not mistaken. I know Ben Barkley got one late on.
Barkley. And the thing is, actually, those were then that it was that kind of indiscipline that led to 2 chances for us because was it the Ben Barkley one was the foul that Lass whipped in that Pordy then touched onto the post. And at that point, that just shows what a good team can do again. We'd soaked up pressure. We were 2-1 down. The home crowd should have turned. It should. And actually, those 8 minutes, we just kind of stood up and went, right, well, let's have it. They did nothing after their goal. In terms of XG, I'm looking at it now. After they scored, they didn't have another shot. And I think that's credit to us. I actually don't think we particularly got out of second gear in the second half. Given we played the Good Friday, given we've got big games coming up, I don't think we were conserving energy. I don't think we were at a canter. But I think that we took it easy, but we didn't have to be as intense in the press. We didn't have to work as hard as we were working in the final minutes against Leighton Orient. And then obviously Ted icing on the cake. I mean, you know, it's the first direct free kick we've scored all season, isn't it?
Do you know, I didn't know that. I remember us having the conversation on the coach back, actually asking the question, but we couldn't really find out the answer on our phone, so we weren't 100% sure. But yeah, I'm not surprised by that. Look, Ted, we'll pick up on Ted in a second, actually, because I just want to mention Jovan first of all, because, and I said it after, it was either the podcast or the monthly show anyway, where I was sort of heavily praising Jovan for a lot of the things that he's doing now that he maybe struggled with earlier on in the season. And in fact, I hark back to a podcast I did with yourself back at the start of September, and it was after the Bristol Rovers away game where Jovan came on with 20 minutes to go. It was great. We had an out ball, but every time he got the ball, he'd make the wrong decision or he didn't have the technical ability with the ball at his feet to actually use it as an out ball. And it was basically wasted opportunities whenever he got the ball. And the free kick that led to the Pordy O'Connor chance or whatever from Lass whipping it in, that was all Jovan. Again, he's seeing that there's no real pass on. So, right, I'll take you on. He's obviously playing with confidence. So he tries to take on his defender, beats him, gets dragged down, boom, free kick, great chance. So, you know, huge credit to Jovan for that one. Absolutely. And, you know, I feel like I'm being a broken record at the minute, but I actually think it's unbelievably fair on a lad who must have had a very, very difficult season, all things considered. And then, yeah, look, Ted. Wow, Ted Bishop was good. I want to just touch on something that you mentioned, actually, Gary, in your live the other day. because you were talking about the three pillars of a football team, and obviously, yes, okay, Chris will say four with a goalkeeper as well, but the three pillars: defence, midfield, attack. It's the midfield that shone for me on Monday, because and I actually think they're the most important. You know, you need a midfield that can break up transitions from the opposition and create chances of your own. You know, you can have a defence that's strong, but if they have so many chances coming at them, they're going to end up conceding some. And an attack can't really score too many goals if there's no chances created. So for me, it's always the midfield that's key. And what you need, like I said, what you need is a midfield that can break up transitions, but also create chances. That doesn't just have to be one midfield player, but as a midfield collective. But what we had on Monday was, as much as we had it as a collective, we had that Justin Ted Bishop on his own. I mean, his stats for Monday, and yes, his eye test was also brilliant, so people tell me, but his stats are also outstanding. 11 ground duels won in the game, all of them successful. That's, like I said, that's obviously the most of anybody. He also had four tackles on top of sort of your average ground duels as well. 51 passes attempted, 80% successful. Everything about Ted Bishop on Monday was outstanding. But then you also had that on top of the great work that was being done by the other midfielders. You know, for example, Ethan Aaron, he made three interceptions. That was the joint best in the game. You know, Bishop had the most amount of touches for us. He had six fouls against him. I think that was something you tweeted out as well. Like, that in itself is a crazy, crazy stat. But then the defence as well. Pordy, 9 clearances, most in the game, easily. Second, Rico was 6. Rico, outstanding in defence as well, I thought, on Monday. There was a very early chance, for example, where we couldn't really seem to clear the ball out. This was before we had scored. We couldn't really seem to clear the ball out. The ball just kind of trickled across the box. Rico was there, tidied it up, booted it long. So those little things that I just think this team... Everybody knows exactly what it is that they're supposed to be doing, and they're all playing at the minute the best I think we've ever seen them play as individuals, let alone as a team collective.
I'll buy that. Your stats, I think, there have come from obviously somewhere a little bit different. I've got Ted on 6 interceptions on Monday. 4 against Orient, 3 against Stevenage, 4 against Shrewsbury. I mean, yeah. You know, I'm not going to talk too much more about Ted. I've done 2 articles on him this month, and as yet, this season, and as yet, they haven't cursed him particularly. But yeah, it's absolutely outstanding. Do you know the last time we scored from a direct free kick? I just looked it up while you were talking.
No, is the answer to your question.
It was away. It was Ted at Accrington when we beat them 3-0 last season. According to the stats I have.
Yeah.
And then the 2 times that we scored direct from a free kick before that were both George Grant.
You know, I'm trying to think, you know, I think Ted won that free kick on that day as well against Accrington, if I can remember,
yeah,
I remember correctly.
Yeah. I think he did. He was outstanding. So look, that was that. Look, the stats absolutely say that the fairest result would have been a victory for Carlisle on Monday. The XG, well, 1.11 to 1.77, so you could argue a draw. But 17 shots, 7 on target. We had 11, 5 on target, 43% possession for us, 56 for them. They played more passes. They had a better pass accuracy than us. They lost the ball on fewer occasions. But that's a team in confidence and a team not in confidence, I think, isn't it? So do you want to have a final word on Carlisle before we move on?
Yeah, look, the stats in the game, if you want, can prove that Carlisle maybe deserved more out of the game, 3-1 was a harsh result or anything like that. But that's ignoring the quality of the game management that we've brought in, and it's sort of been a key of Skubala's sides over the past sort of few months, let's be honest, ever since he came in. It's something we spoke about earlier when, you know, the first 15, 20 minutes we're attacking, and then we're willing to let the other side have more of the ball and all of this. And yeah, okay, that can maybe inflate their stats. But again, at Carlisle, we felt nervous, but probably at no point did the players or the management team, because they knew exactly if they were to get within one goal of us again, then we'll just go out and we'll play a slightly different game and hopefully go and get another. So yeah, huge credit to what Michael has brought in to the football club in terms of that, not just the playing side of it, but also the, like I said, the game management overall, that these players have been really intelligent.
Excellent. Thank you, Charlie. Well, they're going to need to be intelligent this weekend because in my opinion, we're coming up against one of the best sides that I've seen at Sinsel Bank this season, whose league position absolutely is a false one. Certainly based on the fact they had a points deduction, but also I think based on the fact that they started four steps behind everybody else, even in terms of squad, I think, as well. So look, after a little ad break, which, as I am led to believe, is an almost inaudible advert for McDonald's, because when I listened to the Academy, I couldn't hear my advert. I thought, what's going on there? And then I turned it right up, and there I was whispering about McBurgers. So we'll have an ad break. And then when we come back from the ad break, we're going to go straight into the Reading, or a slither, of the Reading preview, where Mr. Beeston has been talking to our good friend, Johnny Hunt.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Stacey West YouTube or podcast, wherever it is that you're watching or listening to myself today. But I am, of course, not alone, because we have got another preview, this time looking ahead to Reading on Saturday. Pretty big game for us Imps now. Those of you who can see the screen, if you're watching on YouTube, will be able to see that I'm joined by someone we had on earlier on in the season, Mr. Johnny Hunt. Johnny, how are we doing, mate?
Good, mate. How are you?
Very, very well, thank you. I mean, obviously, it's very easy to be in quite a good position when you're a Lincoln City fan at the minute. Maybe less so Reading, but I think probably the best place to start is, if we'd have offered you at this stage of the season to be sat 17th, 6 points above the drop zone, would you have taken that earlier on this year?
The way things have been, mate, to actually have a club existing is a bonus. But yeah, I think, you know, if you look at where we were, and obviously, you know, everyone knows about all the off pitch stuff that's been going on with points deductions and the owner and everything else. But what it's done is actually kind of unified the fans and the team. You know, we've had sort of since November, you know, we've been on a fairly decent run of performances. Yeah, we, you know, we lost to Bolton on Monday, but like, you know, they're top of the table for a reason. It's one of those games, maybe a game too far. We've, you know, we've got a very small squad with a lot of young players in that have really gelled with Ruben Sellers, who, if he keeps this up, should be the unofficial manager of the season, I think, because and under all the circumstances that he's had to work, you know, he's done an incredible job just to keep the team from not crumbling, which, you know, could have been easily done. We could be, you know, we were bottom early on in the season, but he changed tactics, changed style, unified the team. And, you know, not all the protests that were kind of, you know, including the abandoned game, that stopped. And, you know, we focused on other things. But the team was allowed to get on with it, and they've been allowed to get on with it. And, you know, they've put in some great performances, you know. Yeah, you know, to say 6 points above relegation is an achievement. It actually is for us, you know, where we've been as a club. And hopefully, you know, it's been a pleasure to watch some really young players grow and develop as a team and as a unit against the odds, which, you know, as a fan, as Reading fans, we've been wanting to see a sort of a team spirit like that for a long time. And it's great to have it back in such random circumstances.
No, absolutely. I mean, you picked up on something there that, I mean, I was going to ask a little bit later on, but you know what? We'll ask it now. Ruben Sellers. I mean, I was actually quite critical of him at one point this season, and I didn't think that it was the right job for him and he was the right man for Reading, because from the outside looking in, it you know, I think Ruben Sellers is a good head coach and he's a good young coach for the future and all of that. I just didn't really see that the situation that Reading were in was going to be the right one for him. And maybe you'd have needed somebody with a little bit more experience in the lower leagues that could just make sure, strip the team back to basics and build from there sort of thing. But actually, Ruben Sellers has done that himself, hasn't he? And this is probably the best opportunity for him to be getting EFL experience, you know, added on to what he's already got. So, you know, I think we'll, like I said, we'll kind of ask that. Ruben Sellers, how pivotal has he been this season? And do you think you'd have had anywhere near as good of a job done if it wasn't for him?
Like, the talk in the summer was that Chris Wilder was a done deal. You know, and that was before all of the stuff that's come out about the club. You know, and Lewis Wing's wife spoke about it the other day. You know, and basically, you know, how people who lied to at the club, that come to the club, including, I imagine, Sellers, you know, what he was sold as a dream job has certainly turned into a bit of a nightmare, you know, with all the embargoes and the different things that, you know, were thrown at him. And certainly, you know, when we've spoken before, you know, at the start of the season, you know, we had Andy Carroll still playing for us then, but kind of quickly it became clear that he wasn't going to fit into the style of play. And Sellers kind of stuck with this very narrow kind of 4-2-2-2 sort of system. And it was his kind of trademark, I guess, you know, when he was at Southampton. And, you know, was, you know, League One Championship, it's a different beast. You can't stick to one way of playing all the time, you know, especially when you haven't got the personnel to do that. And you literally have got players thrown in into a situation where, you know, you're hoping it works. But eventually, I think, he learned on the job. He's learned a lot, I think, about, you know, how to deal with, you know, the man management side of things and, you know, dealing with guys that, you know, don't know if they're getting paid month to month. Like, to be honest, if you can manage Reading this season, you can manage anyone in the circumstances. You know, that's I think, you know, the respect that he's got from people, because the people were critical of him, but he's learned from it and he's you know, he's put out a good young team there with, you know, some real promising players, like, you know, guys like Tyler Bindon, who, you know, nobody had heard of at the start of the season, but he's coming in, he looks like a seasoned pro at the age of 18, 19. You know, obviously we've lost Nelson Abbey, who was another local lad that went, and Tom Mack. You know, that's the owners trying to asset strip the club. But, you know, what we've still got is guys that, you know, guys like Lewis Wing, who is a class player and who's really stepped up as a leader for the team. Sam Smith, Harvey Nibbs, Femi Aziz. You know, we've got some real creative attacking threat. And, you know, we always look like we can score goals. The problem being is, you know, occasionally, like Bolton, you know, we kind of have a bad day at the office, because you've still got players, young players, you know, learning their trade and trying to do what they do and make mistakes. And, you know, a good team will punish those mistakes, and that's football and that's the way it is. But then, you know, I think, you know, as a group and as a squad and as a manager, they learn from their mistakes, because you can see it when they're playing, you know, that they don't, you know, it's you know, one game, and it's on to himself. You know, he looks at a game at a time, and you know, be focusing now on Lincoln, which, you know, as we know, will be a, you know, a really tough game again. But, you know, they'll go into it with no fear, because that's what they're about. You know, they've got the right attitude, and they've got the, you know, they'll show Lincoln the respect that they deserve. But we'll also go and try and play our own game as well.
What's Johnny's podcast?
I think he wanted to plug the Talking Royals, which is their mental health online support group thingy.
Okay. So I'll let you come in. I'll come in and say, brilliant, thank you for that, Johnny. And just a word on the Talking Royals, and then throw that over to you if you're happy. Okay.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So thank you, Charlie, who's with me. And thank you, Johnny, who is not. But Johnny there, I think he wanted to mention the Talking Royals, I believe, didn't he?
Yeah, it's, you know, he mentioned it at the end of the preview on the YouTube channel. So if you go over and watch that, you'll kind of hear a little bit more about it from himself. But it's like an online sort of mental health support group that they're setting up. And in fact, they've actually got their first in-person meeting on Saturday before the game as well. I'm hoping to head down there and go and see Johnny anyway before the game. So I'm hoping to kind of go and have a little look at what that's all about. And apparently any fans, don't matter what club, can turn up to that. So definitely pop down there and check that one out. Absolutely. I think Johnny does some really, really good work on this kind of mental health side of it and some of his charity work. So, yeah, huge praise to him.
Yeah, he's a great guy, Johnny. He really is. Writes records for the Real EFL. So obviously, he's had a bit to say about Reading. I think they're just glad to get to the end of the season. I did a little bit with the Elm Park Royals, I think it was, earlier in the week as well. And, you know, it's strange talking to supporters who are kind of just happy that it's April and they still exist, when actually they are one of the better sides in this division. And if they find a level footing and they're able to kind of keep the nucleus of the squad together, I think that they could quite easily be quite a serious prospect at this level. Now, obviously, they lost their last game 5-2 to Bolton, but the crucial thing there is they scored twice against Bolton. They beat Northampton and Cambridge before that, scoring five across those two games without reply. Narrow defeats against Derby and Wickham, and then you kind of get into the inconsistent Reading of beating Carlisle, losing to Shrewsbury, beating Port Vale, losing to Portsmouth, drawing with Fleetwood, beating Charlton, drawing with Oxford. They can be relatively inconsistent. I always like to kind of cast my eye down a squad and think, you know, do they have a majority of players that I like or not? And that leads, kind of builds my fear level. It's almost like a computer game. I look down and, do you know what I mean? Like, fear level starts going up. And I see Harvey Nibbs, and I see Femi Azeez, and I see Lewis Wing, and I see Kelvin Ibishman, and I see Sam Smith. And I think, this is a really good attacking side. And that's without mentioning Paul McIrew, who I know has been running hot and cold. The boys I chatted to earlier in the week said to me that, you know, his best game was probably against Lincoln. Well, he scored in the last minute against Bolton after coming on. The boy's on loan from FC Copenhagen. I mean, he's a good player. I think this is going to be a real challenge for us, if I'm honest.
I agree. At the start of the month, when we're discussing the running, you know, when we're looking at the fact that playoffs is suddenly a real possibility, and we're kind of picking and choosing what games we can maybe get results out of, Reading was one of the hardest ones in this run, I think, going away to their place. And let's be honest, if they've conceded five to Bolton, they're going to have had a little bit of a kick up the arse this week. And that in itself is, again, a bit of a worry. Now, they are a really, really strong side. When, like I say, when you just look at some of the names, these are top-level League One names anyway, some of these players. And then you mix it in with some of the maybe more unknown players that are a little bit younger but starting to come through and are also playing really, really well. It's a big worry. I'm not looking forward to this game, if I'm totally honest, for that exact reason. I think they're going to provide us a real difficult challenge. The only slight saving grace for us is the fact that defensively they're not exactly the strongest. They make a lot of silly errors defensively. And it's what you'd maybe expect from a squad that is, you know, typically reasonably young, but not just in terms of age, but also in terms of experience. So I'm not too surprised by that. But like I said, they make a lot of silly errors. They're not always great at clearing their lines. I think somebody like a Ben House could actually do really, really well against Reading this weekend. Sort of constant press. Same with Joe Taylor, if he's going to kind of take on that mantle as well. I don't think there's going to be too many opportunities for the likes of Joe Taylor to run in behind unless we're taking a lead sort of reasonably early on. We've maybe got a couple of goals advantage on them. Because at the end of the day, Reading are going to be safe this season. I don't think there's any denying that they're going to be safe, but they're not 100%. Mm-hmm. Do you disagree?
Well, I mean, first of all, sorry, I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you've stopped anyway. I just wanted to be a condescending voice in the background, not one that stops you in full flow, Charlie.
No.
I mean, I take on board what you say, by the way, about centre-halves. They play a two centre-halves, one of them Tyler Bindon, who's come through their youth academy, and I think it's the first full season he's played, although he's a New Zealand international. And then Amadou Mbengue, who came from Metz, I think. So I buy that, and they play quite a narrow kind of two holding midfielders as well, don't they? Well, they certainly did in the last game. Charlie Savage and Lewis Wing. I really like Lewis Wing. They're not safe at the minute. They're on 45 points. Port Vale are on 39. It's 6 points. I think they'll stay up. I'm not saying I think they'll go down.
No, that's what I'm saying.
At this moment in time, probably they're the last team that are just in the conversation. Shrewsbury on 46, you would imagine, are safe. But, you know, if you are conceding silly goals, I mean, they've conceded 41 goals, by the way, away from home, which is more than anybody else in the league. So that you're quite right. They do concede goals. They've only conceded 21 at home, which is actually fewer than Portsmouth. So, they're a good prospect to the Majestic. Yeah.
No, they are. And to be fair, I mean, I probably shouldn't have let you stop me in full flow there, because in all fairness, I was the end of my sentence was, I think they're going to be safe, but they're not safe yet. Sort of was kind of the general idea I was going for. So they're not going to be playing with that freedom of purely willing to attack and not having a little bit of an eye on sort of making sure they're strong defensively to stop any goals from us, sort of thing, as you know, some teams can, like I say, play with that kind of extra freedom. That's not something they're going to be afforded the opportunity to do in this match, because they're not safe. Like I say, I think they're going to be, purely because, if I'm honest, 45 points is probably where I see 21st finishing this season, rather than sort of 46 to go above Reading, and goal differences and such could very much swing that. But as I say, they are the sort of side that they're not going to be fully safe yet. They are going to want to make sure that they kind of keep this level of defensive solidity and probably try and frustrate us a little bit, like what Leyton Orient did. I just don't think they're going to quite have the experience or the expertise to do it in the same way.
I disagree on the expertise. I mean, when you look at Sam Smith and Harvey Nibbs and Ia Bishman, I mean, they've got the expertise, haven't they? And they've scored 35 home goals, as we have, and we've got 6-0 and a 5-0 in there. I think they've got that. They've won more home games than we have. They've won more home games than Barnsley and Peterborough. They're an anomaly. They're the anomaly in this division for me. They're the team that people look and they're in 18th. If even with their points deduction, which I think is 6 points, they'd still only be 12th. But their home, that home record, 37 points at home, that's playoff home form. Without a doubt. And if I remember at the beginning of the season, wasn't there a news story where they had moved the away fans to a crappier area away from the pitch in order to try and make more of an atmosphere for home fans? I remember that because I put a tweet out about it and it got about 400,000 views or something silly like that. And I remember getting slated by Reading fans. I'm putting us down for a draw in this game, without a doubt. I think that it'll be a draw. And, you know, when you think about it at the beginning of the season, that wouldn't have been a bad result. Oxford are away at Burton. That's going to be a tough one for them. Mm. You know, they could only draw there if Burton are on it. So, yeah, I think this is a point for Lincoln and not three.
It's difficult because I'm looking at the opposition less during this run than I was doing for the first half of the season, because I know that we're focusing on ourselves, and the way that we're setting up is so much more pragmatic than maybe it was a little bit earlier on in the season, because we're focusing opposition to opposition, which you're afforded a luxury of doing when you've only got five games left or whatever. So yes, I agree. I think I'd be willing to take a point, and I certainly wouldn't be surprised if we were to get a point. Still think we can get three, though. I just feel like with the way that we're playing,
I think we will. I hope you're right. Honestly. I hope I'm wrong, and I hope you're right. I do. Right, moving on. We've got a little bit of a special podcast out at the moment. For those who do not know, I've been recording with Paul Degare, who was a goalkeeper who was on loan at the link with City in the mid-90s. He came on loan from Sheffield Wednesday. He's a member of the Former Players Association. And I've been recording former player podcasts. Now, some people, this might not be the sort of thing that you normally wish to listen to. I think that there's a group of people who will listen to us talking about modern-day football, but what's past is past and they're not interested. And there'll be people that listen to the Former Players podcast and not so much this. But for those of you who don't listen to the Former Players stuff, the one that we've had is this last couple of days is brilliant. It was Colin Alcide. And I say Alcide because for 20, 30 years, I was absolutely convinced it was Alcide. And we asked him yesterday on the podcast and he confirmed it's not. It's Colin Alcide. So I was recording with Colin Alcide and Paul Degare. And when I first saw those names, I thought that it was Colin Alcide and Paul Degaris. So that shows you my pronunciations. Although I didn't get any kudos from you, Charlie, by the way, for being able to pronounce Kelvin Ibishman.
No, because it took me a minute to figure out who on earth you were talking about. Do you know what the funny part was? I did a League One Real EFL podcast the other week, and Adam on there, he said it as well. And I remember like mentioning it to him afterwards, and I gave him kudos. He said, yeah, I kind of spent 10 minutes in front of the mirror practicing that one. So I just assumed you did the same.
No, I the last time I did the Reddit preview in December, I did get them to tell me how it was, and I practiced it then. And it just goes to show you that learning stays with you. Something else that stays with you is the 1995 to 1998, 99 period under John Beck and the promotion and the cup runs and all that sort of thing. And so I just want to give you guys just a little snippet of the sort of thing that that's on these former players podcasts. So here's just a quick story about the 1995 team, 1995, 96 team, I believe, from the mouth of 140 appearances, 31 goals, Colin Alseed.
So if someone came in on trial and he'd do something controversial to him, and he used to judge people on their reactions. So if they just went into their shell and they didn't stand up for themselves, he wouldn't sign them. He wanted someone to get in his face and stand up for themselves.
Did you ever see an example of that, Colin?
I think there might have been an example with Thorpe when Thorpe came from. He might not have signed yet when he came from Blackpool, and something went on. And I think Thorpe was on the verge of knocking him out, because that was Lee's character. Lee didn't mess about. He was he's the hard man, and Becky loved it. Becky loved it. He says, "Right, I'm signing you, mate." just standing up for himself. So it was kind of an everyday thing. Every training session, he'd be winding someone up and wanting a reaction. I remember they were doing crossing. They was crossing the ball. So just for keepers, they were just crossing the ball, and then I think it was John Vaughan, and Becky's you just saw him walking across with a bag of balls, and as Vaughan has gone up to catch the ball, Becky's just swung this bag of balls at him and smacked him with this bag of balls while he's going. And he says to him, "No, this I'm trying to emulate the centre forward coming in and clashing into him." The Vaughan just kind of scowled at him. And then another cross came and he did it again. And Vaughan says to him, "If you do that again, I'm going to fucking knock you out." The ball came over again. Vaughan's gone up to catch the ball. He's done it again. He smacked him with his balls. And the next thing he saw was his balls just scattered on the floor. Becky running across the train.
Brilliant. Would you get out on the training ground nowadays?
I don't think so, no.
I don't think so.
I mean, we kind of used to police ourselves as well. It's like if people had come in, say people had come in on loan, and the boys, you'd weigh them up in like training sessions and then weigh them up in the games. And I remember it was a training session, and it was times Becky would say to you, "Right, put your boots on, put your shin pads on. So this is going to be game pace." You know what I mean? So there's, like I said, Witters would be diving in. He loved a two-footer. And it kind of, so everyone's playing full scale. And I think there must have been someone on loan who'd been there a few weeks or a month or so. And they played in the previous game and not put the foot in. But they'd been putting the foot in the training session. And I think a few of the boys went for him. They're saying, "You're telling me you're here kicking me, but last Saturday you didn't go near any of their defenders and put your foot in." So he soon got put in your place, and literally it won't be Becky kicking him out, it'd be us lot kicking him out.
Brilliant. So yeah, if you want to listen to that, it's on the normal podcast channel. Also, thanks to Charlie, it's also on the YouTube channel. It's the first one that we've put on YouTube as well. So you'll get to see Colin, you get to see me admonishing my dog for barking halfway through the the podcast as well, which he hasn't done today. So we're getting close to the end of the show now, but there are a couple more things to talk about. This is the last bit on Lincoln City before we move on to anything else. So season ticket sales or memberships or whatever they're called these days. There was a big push at the beginning of the week, and I believe that we closed on close to 5,000. Now, look, what's going to happen between now and the next 2 minutes is we're going to talk about how good it is and how it shows that the fans are behind the team and how it's great for the club to have that belief and blah, 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 blah. It's the same every year. And whilst it is good, there's a fear sometimes that it's almost taken for granted. I do. You know, I see season ticket sales. Well, we'll sell 5,000 of those. And then in the next run, we'll sell another 1,000, 1,500. If we go to the championship, maybe 2,000. And everyone slaps everyone on the back, just like we were doing when we came out of the National League, just like we were doing when we won League Two. It's almost expected. But we've just been talking about a team, Reading, whose owner have tried to sell the training ground to Wickham, knowing that there was a clause, I believe, in the training ground planning that said that nobody else could play on it other than Reading. So when you've got an owner who's trying to do that, we really shouldn't take news like great season ticket sales for granted, should we, Charlie?
It's a real kind of proud moment to be a Lincoln fan in that sense, not just for the fact that so many fans are getting behind them, but I'll be honest, like there was at one point, and we all say it every single season, or well, I say we all, there's certain fans, you know, certain sections of fans that every single season say, oh, I'm not renewing my season ticket if it's not going well, that sort of thing. And do you know what? Most people will probably say that at some point, but then they'll always renew it anyway, because we're Lincoln City fans at heart. It's our club. We want to be here through the good moments and the bad. But what impressed me the most out of the numbers was the amount of new supporters that we seem to be getting on board as well. Now, I've been intrigued to know what the number of new fans is that have renewed in the early window compared to previous seasons. But, I mean, the fact that they seem to be mentioning that number a little bit seems to me like it's actually quite a high number. I think it was like 400 or 500 or something, new season ticket holders.
There hasn't always been an opportunity for new season ticket holders to buy in the first window. Because I was really surprised that the £145 tickets were just available to anybody and everybody. And you know, people know that a couple of mates of mine who don't go have bought those tickets thinking, well, we don't go to every game, so if we buy these season tickets, it saves us money. Well, you know, rightly or wrongly, you know, personally, they're my mates. I don't particularly think that that's what they were there for. They were there for people who can't afford season tickets who have them. But anyway, that's by the by. But even so, even those were available to new fans. And I think it shows a commitment as a season ticket holder. Back in the day, there was a sense of entitlement. There was. You know, you expected to get preferential treatment. You expected to get preferential prices. And you still do. And we still get that. Season membership owners get looked after. There's no doubt about that. But I think this is an opportunity that the club have seen to try and capitalise on a growing support again, just as we did in the National League, just as we did when we won League Two, whenever there's been a big cup game. It's not just the people that are already there that you're trying to drag in, because we're already in, you and I, Charlie, even if it's shit, we're going to be there. We'll be moaning about it. We'll be moaning about it on a podcast, but we'll still be there. But there's some people out there who haven't got that bug yet, who may well have bought in this early window, may well have bought for £145 in this early window, who next year will fork out £400, and the year after they'll be going away to Stevenage. Well, not Stevenage, away to Everton on a cold Tuesday night. You know, it's all right. It's all right doing it, going to Peterborough on a Saturday when the sun's shining. Can you go away to Stoke on a wet, windy night? Well, Lincoln City fans, these new ones might be able to find out soon.
And also the amount of parents that seem to be, anyway, you know, it's confirmation bias, obviously, you're seeing it on social media, but the amount of parents that seem to be bringing their kids for the first time and the amount of kids that seem to be enjoying it for the first time. I mean, obviously, it's the perfect symbol of that was Michael Skibala taking the kid out of the crowd on Friday. And it's that we talk about a family-focused club. This just helps prove it, the amount of new season ticket holders, the amount of new first-time fans, the fact we're getting sellouts. I mean, I also want to mention that, like, grassroots football match days that they do, where they have, like, all of the kids sat in the Stacey West stand or, like, half of the Stacey West stand that they've started doing this season. Again, another great initiative trying to get that younger generation through. It's so easy to praise – the club on and off the field. But it's, I think it's great to praise the specifics that they're getting right on a consistent basis as well.
Well, one final thing on that before we move on. On Good Friday, I met up with my mate Lee in the fan zone. So I used to go, Lee used to come every week with me back in 2002, 2003, and 2004, and then kind of life got in the way. The last time we went to a game together was 2011. The last time he went to a Lincoln City game was 2011. He was there because his daughter had got perfect attendance at school and had therefore got a raffle and got free tickets to go to the game initiative. I met my mate Ross. Ross was there the day Jack Hobbs made his only Lincoln City appearance. Not a football fan, Ross. Used to call me a football thug jokingly and all that sort of stuff. Football hooligan, chav boy, all that. We used to give each other a whole lot of stick. But he's now got a son, Deacon, and he took... Deacon goes to a football club of some description down at the ground, and the dads now get to go as well. So I've seen Ross at 5-6 games this season. Again, two people who 10 years ago or 15 years ago, if you'd said to me, oh, Lee and Ross will be at the football, it would have been, well, what's the occasion kind of thing? So I think that's something that's really, really good. It's good for the club and it's good for the city, because the city is riding a crest of the wave at the moment in terms of football. And whilst we're in Reading and I'm going to be on a stag weekend in Birmingham, which I may already have griped about, I'm sure it'll be brilliant as I'm watching football on a mobile telephone. What am I, 106? I was so into the segue there. And So I'll be watching it in Birmingham, of course. But one game that I won't be able to watch, and it is absolutely crucial for the city, is Lincoln United. Now, for those of you who don't know, Lincoln United are 90 minutes or so away from a trip to Wembley. Now, this would be absolutely huge for the Whites. So they play Romford. I think they played Romford in the first leg. Romford had a man sent off after about 5 minutes. Lincoln United then scored a penalty. Romford equalised in the last minute. The Whites scored, and then Romford went up and equalised straight afterwards. So it's 2-2. It's the second leg. Away goals don't count. Now, as I understand it, it's the FA VARs. I think Lincoln United even had to go through a qualifying round, from what I understand, in the FA VARs. Is that right? Charlie's nodding his head.
I believe as much, yes.
And I also, as I understand it, they have won quite a few of their games on penalties as well. So there's every possibility that Lincoln United, Ashby Avenue this weekend, could see penalties and it could see some real action. Now, just before we go through that, so they did. They beat Newark Town in, my God, the qualifying round. The second qualifying round is huge. Yeah. It's huge. There's hundreds of teams in it. So they do 1-1 with Newark Town and won 7-6 on penalties. Then they beat Bugbrook St Michael's. That's a church or a school. That's got to be. They beat them 4-1. They then beat Heena Town 6-0. Then Congleton 2-0. My God, how many games have they had to play to get to this stage? They then beat South Liverpool, who Lincoln fans of a certain age will remember from our season in 1987-88. That was 5-3 on penalties. That was the fourth round. Then they beat Hallam on penalties in the fifth round. Then they beat Deal Town on penalties in the quarterfinals. Oh, my Lord. It's been a phenomenal, phenomenal run for the Whites, hasn't it, Charlie?
Yeah, it really has, actually. And they're also doing extremely well in the league as well, although I think games have potentially started to catch up with them slightly in the league, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, really impressive for them. And like I say, 90 minutes away from a final at Wembley. And for the record, for those that final, Saturday the 11th of May, 1 week before the League One playoff final, and it's non-league finals day. So if no one's ever heard of non-league finals day, FA VARs and FA Trophy both played on the same day at Wembley, a few hours apart, and one ticket gets you into both games. I mean, I was looking at going down there this season anyway to go and sort of do that with a friend of mine, and basically just have a day drinking at Wembley. Very expensive, obviously, but a couple of games of football. Only problem is, I mean, coursework for uni may put a halt to that now if I decide to actually do the coursework. So obviously, that's a slight issue. But yeah, really great for the Whites on that one. And let's be honest, let's just hope that they can do it. I mean, did we find out, because Chris mentioned it to me the other day, did we get confirmation on who the Romford owner is?
Why? Did we need confirmation on who the Romford owner was?
Give me a second.
Okay, for those who want to know as well, the other semi-final is Worcester City, who again Lincoln fans will remember from the FA Trophy, I think, a few years ago, and Great Wakering. So, and the Romford chairman is Steve Gardner, according to this.
Not the chairman, sorry. I meant the owner. Glenn Tamplin.
No.
Yep.
No, he can't still be either alive or not in prison, surely.
Yeah, owns Romford. Do you know what? It was Chris mentioned it the other day, and I just wanted to double check. Oh, wait, no. Never mind. Ignore me. It said that he left in 2021. Well, why doesn't that say it at the bloody top then? They've just done to annoy me now.
Is it in Wikipedia, Charlie?
Yeah, well, I know, and now it does, but it didn't say that at the top when you searched it up, and now I look silly because there is a wanted appeal out for his arrest.
Really?
Yeah. BBC News, 14th of December, 23. Glenn Tamplin, Hertfordshire Police, launches wanted appeal.
Oh, dear. Okay. I'm not even going to edit all of this out. Look, the upshot of this is, obviously Lincoln United have had a phenomenal run. We've gone through the teams they've played there. They've won on penalties. They've had resounding wins. It's been a real slog. They're 90 minutes away from Wembley. Who knows? We could make it a Lincoln 1-2 at our national stadium. We are well over time once again. I think that all that really remains is for us to go our separate ways. Charlie to Reading, me to Birmingham. But rest assured, I will be watching every moment of that game on my mobile telephone device, as I so eloquently put it earlier. We're getting around to the business end of the season. Me and Charlie were a bag of nerves when we were 2-0 up against Carlisle. Can you imagine what we'll be like if it's 0-0 against Reading with 5 minutes to go, or even 1-0 up or 1-0 down with Oxford winning? Whatever happens on Saturday, there's still a lot of football to be played. I believe this is going right down to the wire. I believe that we're going to host the champions, Portsmouth, on the final day of the season, maybe needing a result. But that's all speculation. That's what the Stacey West podcast does. We have been speculating at you for well over an hour, and we are now going to let you go, and we'll be back speculating at you on Sunday. Up the imps.
Up the imps.
So 90th minute, and all your mates around watching the imps on iFollow. You've got your McNugget share boxes on the go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, but then you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.